fake news is almost a rallying cry in the Trump presidency. An analysis from Temple University shows that fake news and failing New York Times are the two phrases President Trump tweeted the most in his first 100 days in office.
But why does fake news, the completely made-up stuff, spread so quickly, and why are we so quick to share it? Lucas Graves joins us now. He's an assistant professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at UW-Madison. Lucas, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Well, a big story in the rise and spread of what we now call fake news and all its different incarnations really spreads a lot, it seems like, on social media. Do we have some idea of why people share fake news, maybe without investigating it, on Facebook or Twitter or whatever?
You know, that's a really surprisingly difficult question to answer. But I think a good starting point is that we certainly don't know that people share fake news always because they, you know, they necessarily believe the claims that they're spreading, just as we don't always know that people, how deeply people believe in the answers they give to surveys of political knowledge or misinformation.
And that's got to make it hard, as somebody who studies fact-checking and the impact it has, to know what that impact is, what people are actually thinking.
Yeah, it certainly does. I mean, there are different motivations people might have when they're answering the questions that a survey asks them, or when they're sharing information on fake news. One motivation may be to demonstrate the depth of their political knowledge, to try to get the answers correct if they know them. But at the same time, people may want to agree with the person that they're talking to. Or they may want to express allegiance with a particular set of views or with a particular social group, you know, and that can in turn be tied to questions of race and class and political upbringing, you know, regional affiliations and so on. So it's a very complex picture.
And so it's not so much here I'm sharing facts with you. It's in a way, here I'm stating my identity to you, even though we probably don't think of it that way consciously.
Yeah, that's really true. I mean, the broad point is that a lot of us don't really have firmly held or carefully developed opinions about major policy questions, and we may not know much about the kinds of questions that researchers tend to ask about. There was a sociologist who was here at UW for a while named Nina Eliasoff. Mm-hmm. She did a really interesting study, a book about Americans' political attitudes and how Americans talk about politics. And I love the way that she makes this point. You know, she argues that most of us don't carry beliefs around like change in our pockets. Instead, we form our beliefs or we express our beliefs in social contexts. And again, our motives when we're developing those beliefs can really run the gamut. Of course, we want to show that we know the answer to the question in many cases, but that's not the only factor that's at work.
Right. I think there's almost a hidden assumption, I'll say for me and a lot of people in the media, probably people in the political science and pollster world, that people out there, they have ideas. Oh, they would be happy with 37% taxation, but not 41. Or they have these really precise things, and we are just trying to suss out what they are. There may not be a there. It's all constantly being formed and reformed, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, there are certainly underlying political attitudes and preferences, but they don't tie together necessarily into a very, coherent
We're not carrying around a policy platform in our pockets with us all the time.
Yeah, that's really right. And there are, a number of interesting studies that show how people's responses to these kinds of questions may change when you alter the incentives are involved. So when you alter the incentives that are involved. So, for instance, there's a pair of studies that were carried out last year, a pair of experiments that were carried out that tested the effects of giving people small financial rewards for answering questions correctly. And they found that when they did this, compared to not doing it, the partisan gulf in terms of getting the correct answer on questions that Democrats tended to get wrong or Republicans tended to get wrong. The partisan gulf was cut basically in half when you give people even small financial rewards for getting the right answer. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily that people are deliberately expressing opinions that they don't believe in. It may also be that when you offer to pay them, they're a little bit more considered, a little more thoughtful in their responses. But again, the underlying point is there's a lot more going on there than people simply expressing flatly held beliefs.
Talking to Lucas Graves from UW-Madison, looking at fake news, social media, polling, and what we believe and what we say. And Lucas, I'm guessing polling has been around a lot longer, so it's been studied a lot more than our social media behavior. But as a laboratory, I mean, social media, this is stuff that we are sharing socially. So even more so than if I'm on the phone with a pollster, the social element, it seems like, would be way stronger in what I share on Facebook and other social media.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. And we have a lot less research so far exploring people's motivations in sharing articles online. I mean, all of us know, I think, that, you know, we may share a link for different reasons. In some cases, we may strongly agree with the point that's being made. But of course, an article can include a lot of different points. We may not have read it that closely. You know, we've all had the experience of sharing something and then looking at it more closely and realizing that maybe it didn't say exactly what we thought it said. We're looking for attention online from groups that we're affiliated with, from our friends. We're hoping that our posts will be retweeted and receive lots of attention. So it's a really complicated picture. And, you know, it's a mistake, I think, to simply associate people with, you know, in any too literal way with the content of the claims or the articles that they share online.
Right, a very common sort of thing you see shared online in the political world, I've seen this from both sides, is, ha ha, political figure from the other side said or did something stupid. And when someone shares that, it seems like it's not necessarily that it's not important whether it's true. It fits the worldview, whether it's satire or they're sharing it as real. It fits their reality and they're sharing that with other people. Am I oversimplifying?
No, I think that's a really fair way to put it. I mean, we may not always have thought through in any great detail how we feel about a piece of information that we share online, especially when we can see that it's broadly aligned with our viewpoints, or we suspect that, you know, that our friends online will like it or will enjoy it. So we may not have a clearly formed factual opinion about whatever we're sharing.
With all this in mind, let's get back to your work on fact-checking now. Does fact-checking matter if we're willing to share stuff as a social signal, not really to say this is a thing that is true?
So, you know, in the best cases, fact-checking makes a difference only on the margins. I mean, that means, even the best and most robust efforts at fact-checking aren't going to convince people to completely abandon their false beliefs. They're obviously not going to convince politicians to stop repeating false claims when it's in their own interests. But there is a lot of evidence that fact checks can have a modest effect in both dissuading politicians from these kinds of exaggerations or deceptions, and in some cases, in convincing people to be skeptical about some claim that they've heard. So there's no question that we're better off with fact checking than without it. And none of these problems are really new. I mean, I think journalists have always had to accept that, you know, that their work doesn't have the immediate impact in the world that they might hope it has, that not that many people are reading, you know, that report on the school council meeting. It's something that we live with.
Is there, now you mentioned that study, paying people and then they try to tailor their poll answers more to what they think is true rather than their beliefs. Is there a platform online, in person, that lends itself better to people trying to consider ideas versus signal their identity by sharing stories that may or may not be true?
You mean, is there any environment online that kind of thought?
On or offline, I guess, apart from public radio. Oh, okay. I won't even claim that. But
that's a really great question. I mean, I think that the environments that are more likely to do that are those environments where we are aware that our audience includes not just our friends, but, you know, but a sort of broader public, and where we might be a little bit more thoughtful in the way we express our opinions. There has been some really fascinating research done on people's behavior in comments pages or in comments on news articles, for instance, which has shown that you can trigger slightly more civic-minded engagement by encouraging people to, you know, to think, to be more thoughtful about their answers, by trying to set aside for a second their partisan biases, just with a couple of adjectives at the top of the page, you know, that's where the comments are made. Unfortunately, you know, the tendency for social media platforms like Facebook is to reward, you know, partisan behaviors that are going to, you know, are going to help stories go viral among our friends. So, you know, I think we all have to try to be more deliberate and more thoughtful in terms in the way that we behave on those kinds of platforms.
We'll leave it there for now. Lucas, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
That was Lucas Graves, assistant professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at UW-Madison. He joined us to share his research on the news ecosystem, specifically when it comes to fake news and fact-checking.